Probably if you ask the question of someone, what would you like today to be like? Their answer would be, to some extent, I want to enjoy today. I want it to be a day where I find personal satisfaction, gratification, and enjoyment. And sometimes we think as Christian individuals, that's a wrong perspective. But the reality is, the Bible is very clear that God's people ought to be people that have as their desire to enjoy the day. You and I know very well that it's only those who have some type of mental perversion who think, what I really want today is to be miserable. What I really want today is to have bad things happen to me. What I really want today is to have to put up with a lot of hindrances and obstacles and frustrations. I can't think of anything that I would like to happen to me today more than just being absolutely frustrated and miserable. No, you and I know very full well that individuals commonly want to enjoy the day. Want to find pleasure in what is available for them to do. Now, we also live at a time of the year where we're told just repeatedly, we are inundated with the fact that if you don't have something, you're not going to be very happy at all. You know, you deserve all of these things that help make somebody else rich, and you better be sure that you get them. And then you find, doesn't take too long, even if I've gotten it, that I'm not really very happy and enjoying what I have anyway. So there must be some secret. How is it that I can really experience in my life the enjoyment of the day instead of being miserable and frustrated with all that's before me? And thankfully, God tells us in His Word what is associated with enjoying what is before us. I'd like you to turn with me to the book of Ecclesiastes. And we remember that in the book of Ecclesiastes, this is a work of Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived other than our Lord Jesus Christ, because God made it very clear that there was no one wiser than him before he lived, and there would be no one as wise as him after he lived. And Solomon evaluated and looked at the things that people pursue to find meaning and satisfaction and gratitude in life, meaning and purpose. And he said that if people think that they have embraced the idea of Madison Avenue and that it's something in this world that'll give them meaning and satisfaction in life, they're going to be left empty. Because all of the things in the temporal world are transitory and empty. And people keep pursuing other things. And Solomon is now developing that theme. And he's looking at all the pursuits that people follow to try to find that sense of well-being, that idea of fulfillment and satisfaction in life. And here he is saying, as he thinks about the reality of the events in your experience, that they're under the control of God, and that God has a time for one to be born, He has a time for one to die. He has a time for every event under heaven. And the real question is, how am I relating to it? Because what will happen in your life today, what happens in my life today, is not a chance occurrence. It's not an accident. It is the fact that God has been at work and He is accomplishing His purpose. And so Solomon says, and I want to go back to verse 12 of chapter 3. I know there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all of his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it. There is nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear Him. That which has all been already, and that which will be, has already been. For God seeks what has passed by. Furthermore, I have seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, and in the place of righteousness there is wickedness. And I said to myself, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man, for a time for every matter and every deed is there. And I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. All go to the same place, all came from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows that the breath of man ascends upward, and the breath of the beast ascends downward to the earth? And I have seen that nothing is better than that a man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. For who will bring him to see what will occur after him? In this passage, Solomon is dealing with the context that all is under the control of God and under his hand. And you and I need to think about how we relate to God's control in the events of life that are taking place. In particular, Solomon has looked at the fact that even when we see the unfairness, the injustice, the wickedness that takes place, and is even manifested in those places where we expect to see justice administered, and people aren't getting what they deserve, but individuals are either taking advantage of their position of authority, or they are not able to really bring about the justice that needs to be done. They don't have the ability to correct the problems that are there. God has tested men. In other words, there is a reality that God is at work to demonstrate to human beings a couple of very important things. And the first is the fact that man is not capable of solving man's problems. That man can begin to understand, as Solomon says here, he's but a beast. Now, Solomon is not thinking of it in the way we might hear of it in the idea of the secular humanists or the Darwinians, who would say we're just an evolved, glorified animal of the earth, and we can look at our ancestors when we go to the zoo and see some of those individuals. But what Solomon is emphasizing is the fact that as human beings, we are creatures. And as creatures, the same thing that is true of the other creatures of this earth are true of us. That while the creatures of this earth look for the ways that they have the provision made for their well-being, they need the water to drink, they need the security from the elements, safety from the elements, the security from predators, they need the food to eat in order to have the nourishment. Isn't that true of us as human beings? We need to have the security from the individuals that would cause us to be terrified as to what might happen to us. We need the shelter to protect us from the elements that are around us. We need the food and water to drink to sustain our life. And so there is a parallel between what is true in our circumstance that is also true of the beasts of the earth. And the point Solomon is making is that as human beings, what we need to understand is that we are creatures and there is someone else in particular, the Creator, who is in control of all the events that take place. And that's why Solomon has said concerning God is that everything he does, verse 14, will remain forever. You can't change it. You can't add to it. You can't take away from it. What is going to transpire today is as the Lord declared through Isaiah, as I have planned it, so I will do it. And the real question is, how is it you or I will relate to the events that God has sovereignly brought to pass in our life on this given day? Now, we know how the people of the world respond to it. They're never satisfied. It's too wet, it's too dry, it's too cold, it's too hot. I don't have enough, I need something more. No one understands what I'm going through. It is a life of complaining and murmuring about everything that's going on in one's life. And the child of God is to have a different outlook and a different perspective. He is to be an individual that lives wisely. And it's the idea that if what I really want is to be happy, fulfilled, if I really want satisfaction in life, if I really want to enjoy this day, what is the skillful way I need to look at the events that are happening as I go through this day, that really is my portion? Because I certainly won't learn it from the people of this world who are never really content with what their circumstance in life might be. I always want something more. And so he says, I have recognized that there is a judgment coming. God is the one that's going to judge all individuals. And God has so worked in order that men may see that they are but beasts. This word that is translated in verse 18 as tested man means the idea of assaying or of purifying. In other words, God has so worked in one sense in which there can be made manifest what is true of the character of the individual. Since you and I live in a world that is characterized by perversions of justice, there are ways in which, as we are the recipient of injustice, or if we are in a position of authority where we can uphold justice, our true character comes out in those circumstances. God has so worked, he has tested men, so that what is really true of us on the inside is what is reflected by us in the circumstance in which we are found. See, it doesn't matter what my skill, my profession might be. There are some individuals that are very comfortable with cutting corners in doing whatever it is they're called to do. And why do they do that? Well, it's because of what they're really like. They're deceitful individuals that want to act as if something is the case, when in reality, it is much less than what the appearance might be. That can be true in schoolwork. You know, I knew I was supposed to do it this way, but I got help from someone else. Someone else wrote my paper. Someone else, you know, did my homework, whatever it may be. And it doesn't end with time when I'm in school. What I really like, the kind of moral character that I have, will be demonstrated in how I handle the circumstance God places me in. So if I'm a politician, what I'm really like, no matter what my rhetoric may be, is what's going to come out in my position of authority. And if I am the individual that is the brunt of the unfairness that goes on in life, then it will become very clear whether or not I'm an individual that is resting in a God who is able to take care of me in spite of all of these injustices, or I become eaten up inside and I want to take it into my own hands and get back at the individual who has treated me so unkindly. God has so tested man. He has put man in those circumstances to demonstrate what's really true within the character of the individual. So what we find is that God shows how an individual responds in a circumstance, what he is really like. And so he says in verse 19, for the fate of the one individual is the same as the fate of beasts. As one dies, so another. Indeed, they all have the same breath. And there is no advantage for man over beast. It's all vanity. It's all futility. For all go to the same place. All came from the dust and all return to the dust. Now, be sure you understand what Solomon is saying. He isn't saying that human beings are of the same level of existence as the beasts of the earth. Because when we go to the book of Genesis, God makes it very clear. Let us make man in our image and according to our likeness. And let's give them dominion over all the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. And so man, in God's goodness and in God's grace, was given a position of authority over all the creatures of the earth. But where is the similarity? When God formed man, Where did he form them from? Dirt. He took the dirt of the ground, he took from the earth, from Adama, and he made Adam, Adam. He fashioned him from the ground. And just like God gave breath to the creatures of the earth, didn't God give breath to human beings? And because of Adam's sin, guess what you and I can look forward to as we grow older? And boy, especially if I'm a young person, I can't wait until you'll soon want that clock to slow down. Because you find life goes by so much faster than you ever imagined it could do. What are you going to end up with? You're going to return to dirt. You are created out of the dirt of the ground, and your physical body is going to return to dirt. When you and I go through life, we have no advantage over the creatures of the earth. Because as in Adam, all die. That is a recognition that's going to be true of every one of us as human beings. I can ignore it. I can try to dismiss it. I can try to refute it. But guess what? I'm still going to die. Death is the portion for every human being. It's appointed once for man to die, and guess what comes after that? And after that, judgment. And so, Solomon says, if individuals are trying to live their life to find fulfillment and meaning in the temporal of what this world can hold, they're going to end up frustrated and empty. Because you're going to find as you get older, you can't do the things you used to do when you were younger. That it becomes harder to get the tasks accomplished. That just like a newborn baby is so utterly dependent upon others to take care of their needs, what you find in this cycle of life, that as we get older, we become dependent on others to take care of our needs as we approach that time of death. As you came out of the dirt, so you'll return to the dirt. So what is your advantage? You can be smarter then. You can reason and function on a higher level. But what we often find is that human beings are really not living much better than the beasts of the earth live, because everything is being done according to their emotions, their instincts, and just their fleshly desires, instead of really exercising that capability that they have in superiority to the beasts of the earth. So man is subject to the same physical death. The fate, that word really means the circumstance, the occurrence. What's going to happen to the one is going to happen to the other. And what is it Solomon says is going to happen? Verse 20, all go to the same place. He is not talking about whether there is life after death when he says this, because he says, all came from the dust and all returned to the dust. Physical death is the portion of every creature. And in reality, you can almost say unfairly to the beasts of the earth, it's because man messed up. And what was under the authority of man is subject to the curse that God placed upon man and his dominion. They all return to dust. And so if that is true, then Solomon talks about man's lack of perception. In my version, verse 21 is translated as, who knows that the breath of man ascends upward and the breath of the beast descends downward to the earth. The first thing we need to be sure that we understand is, just like in Greek, the Hebrew word for breath, that you and I take air into our lungs, and the word for the immaterial aspect of our being, which we would call the spirit, is ruach. It is the same word. And so it can refer to the breathing that's done in the material being, or it can refer to the immaterial part of an individual. And so when Solomon says that the breath of man, he is talking about the immaterial part, ascends upward, and where the beast just is gone. He descends into the earth. The second thing that we need to clarify in this It almost sounds in our English translations as if what Solomon is saying, we don't really know about an afterlife. We don't really know what's going to take place after we've lived in this world. And we know very clearly that Solomon understood about an afterlife, don't we? Who was the author of the book of Job? Solomon. And what did Solomon say in the book of Job? He said that Job says, I know that my Redeemer lives. And that afterward in my flesh, I will see God. And the idea of afterlife was woven into the fabric of the understanding of the Jewish people. What else did Solomon say back in verse 11? What did God put in the heart of every human being? Eternity. The idea that this temporal world is not the totality of my existence. Now, we can look at individuals who suppress the truth in their unrighteousness, in their secular humanism, who try to say, this is all there is to life, when in reality, some of those same individuals who embrace that perverted philosophy find no comfort with the death of a loved one. And even those who have no religious bent, typically, when there is the death of someone they love, they say, oh, they're in a far better place now. Well, just where is that place? It's because eternity is in the heart of man. And man has this reality that pushes him, in spite of what he intellectually might want to believe, in the fact that there is something beyond my temporal existence in this world. I think it would be better if we understood the translation that Solomon has made, or statement he has made that is translated in English, to say it more literally of, who is the one that's understanding that the spirit of man ascends upward while the spirit of the beast into the earth? Who's the one that really comprehends this? Now, if I put it in that context, what's Solomon saying? He is saying, by and large, human beings, while there is eternity in their heart, they understand about the afterlife. When they go through each day, what they don't really comprehend is the fact that I have an accountability. And who is my accountability with? The Creator that made me, who's going to judge the righteous as well as the wicked. That becomes then a controlling, dominating factor in my life. It enables me to live wisely. Because what I say, what I think, what I do this day, guess what? I have to answer to God for it. And the reality is that most human beings, even men and women of faith, fail to appreciate the fact that today is a gift God's given me. And how I act, how I think, what I say, and how I respond, I have an accountability to my God for what I do and what I say. Who's the one that really understands that all of life is under God's control and I have to answer to God as a creature for what I am and what I do? Everything I have is a gift that's come from Him. It's nothing that's originated because of my own merit. It's all come from His hand. What is it I'm doing with it? God is the one who will judge people. Ecclesiastes 3:17. God will judge both the righteous and the wicked. He does it at the right time. We've already learned before, there are times in which He brings it about in our life experience where whatever might be our problem that needs to be dealt with, He brings someone into our experience or an event in our experience that's a master at doing whatever is wrong with us in a far more extensive way than we could ever do with ourselves. There's Jacob with Laban. Jacob was a deceiver, so God took Jacob to Uncle Laban. And Jacob found out, boy, I'm just a kindergarten when it comes to deceiving and tricking. My uncle Laban's got it nailed down in ways I never even thought of. So God has a way in which He brings retributive justice to us in this life. But more importantly, as you go through today, you think about the blessings that you have. Do you understand that they're all gifts that have come from God? And you have an accountability to the Creator. Who is the man who's really understanding there is a day when I will appear before God and I have to give an answer for all that I've done in the flesh? And please don't think if you're a Christian that you're exempt from that reality. It's a different time of judgment and a different kind of judgment than will be true of the wicked of the earth. But as Paul said, we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account for the things that are done in the flesh. Are you taking that into consideration with the way you're handling today? And the reality is, it'll become a controlling, dominating influence in your life. Not one of a phobia that keeps you from doing what ought to be done, but it becomes a governing principle in your life to know God's watching me, and what I need to be is an individual that delights his heart. And like David could say, where did he want it to begin with? Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Because as David said in Psalm 139, before I've ever had the thought, guess what? God already knew it all altogether. How did Joe ever come up with that idea? How did Thomas Edison ever come up with a light bulb? God already knew it. And it should be a dominating, controlling reality in my life. That's living wisely. You may say, well, that doesn't seem right. Remember the parable Jesus taught about the talents? One individual he gave 5 talents, to another individual he gave 3 talents, and to another individual he gave 1 talent. And 2 of them went out and doubled the investment. The other one said, I just hid it because I knew what kind of a person you were. And Jesus' response was, if you really knew what I was like, if you don't think that's right, then you'd actually be more diligent to do something about it. It's the way we excuse and rationalize through the deceitfulness of our heart that all we're really concerned about is ourself and not the glory of God. Who's the one who's really understanding this? Who's the one that comprehends? Your spirit will ascend into the presence of God, and you have to give an account to him. So he says, here's the perspective you're to have. And I have seen, there is nothing better. Please remember, whenever Solomon says there's nothing better, it's not a statement of resignation. He's not saying, well, that's pretty pitiful, so this is all you can have. He is saying, this is how to live wisely. This is the way to best enjoy the day. There's nothing better. It's the best way to do things. And what is it that he says is the best way to do things? First, be happy in your activities. Doesn't matter whether it's you're in school, you've got chores to do, you're going to work. It doesn't matter whether it's a Monday or it's a Friday, it's a Saturday, it's a Sunday. Whatever task, whatever opportunities, whatever is before you, what should you do? Enjoy it. Find pleasure in it. You know why? It's what God's given you. Now, sometimes it's easy to say that when what God has given me is a fruitful bounty that center is all around me. But it might be harder to deal with that in my activities when it's dealing with a fatal illness, when it's dealing with an unexpected tragedy. It's come to pass because that's your lot. That's what God has appointed. It's what God's designed for you. And boy, this is when you find the comfort in a statement that's made by Paul that we remember in Romans 8:28, isn't it? This one who is in control of all things, it is a reality that from the loving hand of our Heavenly Father, he's brought it to pass for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And even though it may be a time of grief and sorrow, there is a way it can be enjoyed because I know God has designed it for my well-being and my good as he continues his work of redemption to conform me to the image of Christ. And the other part of it is that he says, For who will bring him to see what will occur after him? Now, part of that is to say, we don't really know what the future holds. Isn't that true? We may speculate as what we're going to do tomorrow, what may happen tomorrow, but the reality is the future is a mystery. We have no guarantees on the next day, the next hour. And how foolish that we should squander and not enjoy the present that he's given. The moment. The opportunity. To have the physical and mental capability to do what's before me. To recognize that God is going to use me in my life to impact others. And it'll all have to do with whether they see me as the sad sack that's grumbling and complaining about everything that is so typical of the world, or the one that can find that there is joy in pleasing God even in the mundane things of life, or the circumstance that he's brought. And so instead of living life looking forward to, wishing for what may happen in the future, I need to realize the only thing I know for certain is what God's given me now. And it can either eat me up and destroy me, it's my lot, or I can find fulfillment and delight in what God's given me, in my status and in the provisions, that it might be something that is enjoyable to me and glorifying to him. There's not anyone sitting here that wants today to be a miserable day. But so often we waste our time wishing that things could be different or wanting something else than what we have instead of being content with what God gives and seeking to find pleasure in what he's called us to do. Because that's our lot. Never means that as Christian people you shouldn't try to better yourself. Never means you shouldn't be involved in getting the best education you can get to find careers or opportunities that otherwise you wouldn't have. But it does mean I should enjoy what God's placed before me today and be content with where he's put me. Because I never know that I'll have the opportunity to have joy tomorrow. I may never experience tomorrow. The only thing I know is today is God's gift. And what I'm to do with it is to enjoy it and be content with what he's given. That's living wisely for his glory and for your own well-being. Let's pray.